secretary of CIMARCON, which is the Mexican Consortium of Marine Research Institutions of the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean, and speaking in the domain of oceanography. Welcome.
Saludo muy amable a los organizadores por la invitación. Considering we have some guests from the U.S. or English-speaking people, so we're going to give the, this presentation in English. Okay, thank you. Well, this is the consortium of marine research institutions of the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean. Recently built a consortium in Mexico. We're basically working on the Atlantic side of the country. And as Salma said, I'm the executive secretary of this organization. This is the outline of the presentation. We're going to describe broadly what are the main aspects or issues that we are facing in the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean, some of the relationship of these issues, not only for Mexico, but with the neighboring countries like Cuba or U.S., some specific facts on the population and the sectoral activities around the Gulf, so for you to know what's going on there, what are the anthropogenic natural factors in the region, the challenges, the system-based approach that we're trying to follow, who is working in the war in the Gulf and in the Caribbean, and the networking that we have created there, and the high-tech cutting-edge technology that we're trying to use in the region, and some specific projects like this coastal ocean observing system. So just to start, just to focus into the Gulf of Mexico and to the marine issue that I'm trying to here explain, the global connectivity of the oceans. So the our planet is regulated by the oceans very much. Much of the air that you breathe comes from the ocean. Many of the resources that we use in daily life are also coming from the oceans, and we are not isolated. So the water that comes in the Atlantic side, as you can see in this graph, passes through the Caribbean, comes into the Gulf, makes a little current around, and gives life also to Europe. So there's a wide connectivity there. There's an imaginary division, the political boundary from the U.S., Cuba, and Mexico. We have also some portions that are considered high seas, international waters, in the Western Gap and the Eastern Gap. So far we have identified, as well defined, the Western Gap, but the Eastern Gap has not been described because Cuba has not really put the information to the table yet. And we have several threats, and particularly considering the climate change in the world, so we can mention a few of them. Sea level rise, storm surges as a result of the hurricanes and marine transgression processes in coastal areas, hurricanes, stronger, more frequent, pollution, every kind of pollution and source of pollution coming from the continental platform. We have some processes of erosion in the coastal areas, sediments passing along due to port construction and many other infrastructure and facilities along the coast. Ocean acidification is one of the recent issues that are of great concern, and the invasive species that are coming from across other Everybody wants healthy seafood. We want to have vibrant coastal communities. This is a nice picture of what we want to see. If you come to Vallarta or you go to the Caribbean Sea, you want to enjoy life, and you want to have a clean environment, and eat safety food, things like that. However, the actual situation of the resources is quite difficult. There's a challenge in terms of management. And this graph shows you part of the spaghetti, the governance system in Mexico. At least there is no clear framework that will define exactly who does what and how they have to do it and benefiting whom. So everybody is stepping into other people's toes, and we haven't really do yet a good job in terms of planning, the planning process in coastal areas. In terms of the population, we have a growing situation not only in the U.S., where most of the countries have largest populations in coastal areas, whereas in Mexico in general, we have only 50% of our population settled in the coastal areas. So in the case of the Gulf, we have nearly 50 million in the U.S., 50 million people in Mexican coastal states. In terms of the value of the Gulf, the economy of the Gulf is very interesting because, as you can see in these figures from our colleagues in the U.S. for 2009, comparing Mexico and the U.S., a few sectors, oil and gas, fisheries, port shipping and tourism, just to mention a few, and not considering the ecosystem services and the value of the ecosystems that we share in the Gulf, we have quite very interesting figures here, several billion dollars. And just to mention that the five states in the U.S. coastal areas of the Gulf could be the ranking in seventh place around the world in terms of the economic value of what they produce. In terms of the transportation, maritime transportation is a very important sector in the Gulf. You can see these maps moving the vessels from the Atlantic side to the Caribbean up to the north of the Gulf. Corpus Christi, Houston ports are very important. The ports of Veracruz, Coatzacoalcos are important for Mexico, but not at the really global scale. It's cheaper actually to send some of your values and goods to Corpus Christi or to Houston and move it by land to Mexico rather than paying higher fees sending things to the port of Coatzacoalcos, Veracruz, which is also is kind of sad. Anyways, fisheries are overexploited. We can see a few figures also for the Pacific side, so where the shrimp fleet in the Gulf of Mexico have been diminished, as well as the production, due to the entrance of oil in the 70s. But also oil production is facing some concerns in terms of the climate change and hurricanes. So there are some infrastructure that have been affected in the region, passing Vilma, Katrina, Opal, Roxanne. There are many hurricanes passing every year, and there are several damages in terms of the infrastructure in the Gulf of Mexico. Also, for the case of Mexico in the Caribbean, you can see these photographs down into the figure. You can see when we lost some of the beaches in Cancun a few years ago after Hurricane Vilma. And this is also a problem for our economy in Mexico, because every time we have this situation, we have a bag of money that is destinated for these disasters, and the economy bounces back and forth every time, and the amount of money spent in not only Mexico but also in the U.S. and in other countries after every major disaster is huge. So for instance, we have been working in Mexico on the planning, serious planning processes, trying to define what to do in every region of the Gulf and the Caribbean to reduce the risk and the vulnerability of people living. This figure also depicts some of the problems. These photographs are after Katrina in the Gulf in the U.S. Paulina in the Pacific side also posed a big threat in the resources in Mexico, and of course in terms of the money that we spent to recover was huge. Katrina was a big event, and also Sandy more recently. And what I want to bring to your attention is the information that we can bring from the ocean to the public authorities to make the right decision at the right time to prevent disasters and to save lives of people. Also, the relationship in between the continental areas and the ocean is not well understood, or at least for managers. Sometimes they forget that all the water comes from top of the hill, comes at the end of the pipe in coastal areas. So you can see that if, of course, if you don't manage well your systems up in the upper lands, and if you keep the forest state in that, of course, everything that is coming moving from top of the hill will reduce, will arrive into the coastal area. This is one of the examples that we have in the coast of Veracruz. We have the highest peak in Mexico. This is the Pico de Orizaba in Veracruz. And you can see in the photograph here how the forest has been devastated. As you can see, land has been converted for agriculture. So this is a natural protected area, but I wonder who's protecting it, because this picture shows that it's not really protected. And the result of this is all the mud and sediments that comes to the Gulf. So the picture below is Boca del Rio, and it's called, the place is called Boca del Rio. You can see the mud coming up to the coral reefs in Veracruz. Then we have suddenly several events coming from the Atlantic, from the Pacific. Manuel Ingrid, 2 years ago, there were many lives that were lost because of lack of planning, because of lack of information. If you go into the CONAGUA website, you will find many places around the country without information. Interesting. Then, although we have some of the planning mechanisms a few years ago, 15, 20 years ago, we have some wetlands that were used now for constructing this housing. You know, casas geo, casas, these kind of social things that they invent in this government, where there's a lack of dignity for people to provide with a nice place to live. It's flooded because it was built where there used to be a wetland. So the bad planning and how to mention the lack of authority and civil society is not doing anything about it. Pollution is another big issue. You can see the picture here. The Mississippi Basin in the U.S. crosses almost all the territory in the U.S. And the result of that is the nitrogen and phosphorus arrives in the Gulf, reducing the oxygen in the Gulf to 2 milligrams per liter, so that we have a dead zone. So this is the dead zone in the north, and unfortunately also the Grijalva Sumacinta River is developing in similar conditions, so that we have also a dead zone in the southern Gulf in the Mexican waters. Ocean acidification is the result of all this increment of the CO2 in the globe. So corals and all kinds of shells and mollusks that depend on calcium have a hard time now to build their bodies because of this ocean acidification, and this is happening around the world. Algal blooms is also a result of these blooms of the phytoplankton. The red tide is one of them. There are some species that have toxins that are affecting the human health also when they appear in coastal areas. And also the fishermen, they have a hard time trying to sell the products because of red tide. So we have been implementing some new technologies using satellite information, high-frequency radars, and in-situ sampling techniques to find out where is the red tide, to give kind of like a forecasting for people around coastal areas. In many cases, the infrastructure has been built around in Campeche, Tabasco, where we have the major ports or oil facilities, are the result of this erosion in some of the areas in Tabasco and Campeche, as you can see in these photographs. These processes, you have to learn and you have to study the wave climate, let's say, how frequent the waves are passing and how the water moves around the coastal areas and the relationship with the bottom, the that is different in several parts around the world. And so these sediments, sometimes they get trapped in the coastal lagoons like the one at Terminus in Campeche. This is like 700,000 acres, huge lagoon in the Gulf in Campeche. And the effect of these sediments marked here in the yellow, it's killing the seagrasses, and of course, when the seagrass is lost, the shrimp and fish are also gone. So it's an important thing to learn and to study what's going on with the sediments, because in some parts of the coastal area, sediments will be accumulated like this, affecting fisheries and the ecosystem, and in some cases even the properties of people living in coastal areas. In terms of pollution, marine debris is also a major problem, as well as the habitat loss. As you can see, turtles, they need a place to do their nesting around coastal areas, and turtles traveling from Tamaulipas to Alabama have to take each other. There's a transboundary effect. If Alabama, Louisiana, or Mississippi are polluted because oil spills, these turtles will be affected and they won't be coming back to Mexico. Or the turtles that nest in Campeche, that they feed in the reefs of the Caribbean, they go there to feed and they come back to Campeche to do their nesting, have the babies. So it's a huge relationship, and we are polluting the environment, and we are using these places for building hotels or other facilities. So these turtles, they have a hard time. There are some large pelagic, like this fish, the whale shark is called, it's a massive size, that is actually a fish. There is an aggregation in the Caribbean waters where you can count up to 1,400 of them during these months. So the season starts around April or May and ends up to August or September, depending on the water condition or weather conditions. But this is one of the characteristics also, that this migratory fish passes along the Gulf of Mexico and they go around other waters from Africa or Brazil. Sadly, also overfishing or cutting the fins to the chart is an issue around the world, and the Gulf of Mexico is also having or experiencing this situation. Invasive species is a major thing. Ballast water brings different organs, living organisms from different oceans into ports and waters. And in the case of the lionfish, was brought, or there was an escapee from an aquarium in North Carolina in the U.S., and now the whole Caribbean has been invaded by this fish. There are some people trying to catch the fish, trying to eradicate it, that you can capture 1,000 of these fish a day, but they produce 36,000 eggs, one single human. So, and has the capacity to be floating and to be redistributed around these waters. So another Gulf has been invaded, not only the Caribbean. And this is a hard situation. So this is just a few of these major concerns. So what are we doing in Mexico, and how is that we're building this network of institutions? The consortium started with nine institutions, Mexican institutions in the Gulf. And now, after 2 years of work, now we have 25. So Salma and Kudi have been there with us in the regular sessions that we have been building this network, creating the defining who we are, what we want to do, how can we help the government, how can we help ourselves in terms of science and technology. Dr. José Manuel Piña is the rector of the University College of Tabasco, and he's actually the president of this consortium. We already have created something. So we did our strategic planning. So we have now several main themes or topics that we think that are the priority topics, so that we can work together. So the idea of the consortium is that we can enhance our collaboration not only between or among the Mexican institutions, but also considering Cuba and the U.S. And since we put in place a consortium, we signed with 120 universities in the U.S. and coastal areas in the Gulf, also some in the Pacific. In the case of Mexico, there are national universities, or in the state universities in the Pacific, based in the Pacific, are also part of the consortium. And we're working also with National Academy of Science of the U.S. We're working with the Gulf of Mexico Alliance. And we have several partners in the U.S. and Cuba, so we can do joint projects so that we can take the best of this experience. So we are sharing experiences, we're sharing resources. We don't have a budget. We're doing it just for a voluntary basis. We have been conducting 8 meetings in these 2 years. The next meeting is in June to celebrate the Oceans Day. That will be in the port of Veracruz. And the Mexican Navy is going to be hosting this this meeting. These are the main priority issues that we consider the main topics we work with. We are using the actual ongoing projects, and every university, some of them, they have some particular interest or project that are already well advanced, so we are using those as a platform so that we can create synergy and establish new relationships among the universities. In the U.S., as I mentioned, we are working with NOAA, with the Gulf of Mexico University Research Collaborative, with the Northern Gulf Institute, the EPA, the Consortium of Universities in Louisiana, some in Texas, the Texas NAM, the Heart Research Institute, the Gulf of Mexico Coastal Ocean Observatory System, and there are more of our partners there in the U.S. In the U.S., they have also their plan of action that is being renewed 3 times this year in June. The 3rd edition of this plan of action, like long-term plan of action, is being prepared. We are now working with them in that. We have been participating in the meetings with the U.S. trying to join forces and to study some particular programs. We also have created this Educators Alliance for Mexico, and also to join with the efforts in the U.S. The Gulf Summit has been a very nice and creative forum where we can disclose not only academic issues, but also some of the political origin. And there we've been signing some MOUs with the U.S. Institutions. Trying to understand what is going there in the Gulf, and who or is the main driver, what is the main drivers, and the pressures and the result of that in the Gulf. So we're trying to develop this set of indicators jointly with the U.S. institutions. But to do that also, we feel that we need a well-structured integrated observing system. Without data, we won't do anything. So, you know very well that. So the National Polytechnic Institute in Mexico, the Navy, the Space Agency, and CONAVI, and many others have joined this project. We're about to sign an agreement. Observing system. Thank you. President Peña will be visiting France in July, and as a framework of this meeting, we're going to be signing the agreement to build this observing system. We also have some pilot projects. As you can see here, the University of California is also supporting some of the activities. This is a pilot project that we are just starting to set in Tabasco. High frequency radio system, there are some examples of them, very easy to keep and maintain. The data, like the example we have in Bahía Todos los Santos in Baja California, already an implemented observing system with this technology is there. The University of Baja California have very good experience with this these tools. And we're trying to assess on the effects of the loop currents and the conditions related to the continental platform in the Gulf, the hydrodynamic effects also from the water coming from the basin in the Grijalva, Sumacinta, and Rosales River. And also at a larger scale, using the Conacyt and SENER initiative for the Gulf, led by CISESE, actually, we're also proposing the implementation of 20 stations of high-frequency radars for the Gulf of the Caribbean, and this might be kind of the situation of collecting data in the Gulf. There are some examples of the use of these radars, so you can track the oil spills, you can actually also do modeling and forecasting of where the oil will go. This computer is doing some funny things. There's some movement, just to save the time. For hurricanes, like in Florida, this is sample data from some universities in Florida, and the prediction of oil spill in the Gulf. We're trying to define exactly the project of transboundary nature that we're working between the U.S. and Mexico, and some strategic specific actions. And also, of course, trying to find the sources of funding for that. There are several examples on how to work in these aspects. For instance, the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Mexico also invited us to join some projects with NASA recently. We haven't approved some of these projects to start this year to do the assessment of the toxic conditions in the Southern Gulf of Mexico. And there are many universities or institutions, not only those that are settled or based in the U.S. in the Gulf of Mexico, but also some are based in other areas in the U.S. So this is the ideal map that we are thinking of joining forces between state governments, federal governments, and the consortium that we have established. Plan of action in the EPA Gulf of Mexico Restoration Program is being placed there in the U.S. So this is more or less the vision of what we're doing. And of course, we need lots of data, we need integrated systems, and we need your expertise because you are the ones that know on this connectivity in terms of software and gadgets and all these tools that we need to be more creative and to have the right information at the right time.